Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 152. I'm Toby Altizer. Grant Paulson out for this episode. But in turn, we got a special guest from Masson Sports, Bobby Blanco. He's going to join us to break down the C.J. Abrams situation and take a look at the team going into next year as it's the final week of the regular season for the Nationals. Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 152, and it starts right now.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
Welcome in to Bustin' Loose Baseball alongside our guy from Masson Sports, Bobby Blanco. We got plenty to talk about. And Bobby, how you doing, man? We're recording this on a Monday, so we're both rocking our burgundy and gold, but we still got to talk about the Nats as they enter the final week of the season.
Yeah, Toby, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Love your show. I've listened a couple of times. I've heard you guys give me a couple of shout-outs, which is nice. I always appreciate that. But happy to be joining you, actually, as a guest. And yeah, it's Monday Night Football night. I mean, I know we got some baseball to talk to, but you know, the Nats have an off day today, so we can actually just sit back and enjoy a football game tonight, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And honestly, it felt like it was going to be an uneventful last couple of weeks. The Nationals have kind of struggled in September, and then we get the news Saturday that C.J. Abrams gets demoted to AAA, essentially just to go hang out in West Palm Beach because he doesn't have any games to go play in AAA. What's your take on that situation? We had an emergency pod and kind of gave some of our thoughts. I'm curious what you think of that situation.
Yeah, that was kind of a wild day. Just from my perspective, you know, I was at the University of Maryland alumni, so I was getting ready to go into a football game, and my phone starts blowing up and about C.J. Abrams getting demoted, and I was like, that can't be right. Like, I know he's been struggling, but, like, what's the point of sending him down to AAA? Their season ends Sunday. He's not going to play. Like, why not just have him play the rest of the week and finish out the season? But yeah, I mean, some of the reports about him staying out late, casino, you know, you get a night game, you're out till 8 a.m., you have a day game coming up later that afternoon. I mean, it's obviously not a good look. I give a lot of credit to Mike Rizzo and Dave Martinez for kind of nipping this in the bud right away. I think a demotion to AAA, but basically just going down to West Palm and kind of having a season being ended early is a good punishment. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some stuff behind the scenes as well. You know, maybe some of his, you know, privileges taken away. He kind of needs to earn the trust back from the whole organization. I mean, it's not a good look. He's your all-star. He's, you know, along with James Wood, Mackenzie Gore, Josiah Gray, you know, the face of this franchise moving forward now. And unfortunately, we saw some reports too that this wasn't the first time. And I think first and foremost, you kind of just hope that CJ as a person is okay. He's not going through anything, you know, too dramatic. And if he is, hopefully the Nats give him all the resources he would need to kind of battle that. But yeah, just a tough look, tough weekend for the Nationals going 3-1 or 1-3, I should say, in Chicago. And then having your superstar, all-star shortstop kind of mess up in that way. So it was brutal. I think they handled it right. I think they did the right thing. Hopefully, CJ, this is message sent and received. We don't have to talk about this again. It is kind of awkward that, you know, we as the media members won't talk to him again until spring training next year. So we're not going to hear his side of the story. I know we'll hear from Mike Rizzo before the season's end. So we'll hear what he has to say about it. But yeah, no, it's a tough situation. And obviously just wishing CJ the best as a person, because he is a good person, I do believe. So hopefully he you know, kind of takes this and you know, makes this turns into a positive as opposed to, you know, kind of derailing his career or his personal life.
Yeah, talking with Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports, and I want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, when you talk about CJ, you have something like this. I think immediately people question, okay, clearly this isn't being a professional. We understand that. You can't be out till 8 a.m. But I think immediately you think back to what happened with Luis Garcia last year, and how could you not? And Luis Garcia was kind of sent down more so as a professional work ethic issue, right? He wasn't putting in the work necessary. I don't get that vibe from CJ. Like he seems like he's always put in the work. He's there early doing what he needs to. This is more so he's just got to get all out of his own way off the field doing some of this stuff. Like, so I'm hoping that the message getting sent here is something that'll, you know, get to him and he'll be able to fix it. But I'm curious your thoughts. I've always viewed him as a hard worker. He's kind of quiet and shy, but he's one that's willing to put in the work. I wouldn't say it's shocking to see him do some of this stuff. I mean, obviously 8 a.m. is a little bit shocking, but at the same point, it's not something where I've ever questioned his work ethic.
No, I don't question the work ethic at all either. I think, you know, you've been in the clubhouse, so it'll be like, you know, we see him working out a lot. We know the struggles he's gone through this season. He's actually having a decent month getting his numbers back up to a level that we kind of expected of him after struggling in most of July and August. So it is kind of just disappointing also from that aspect where, you know, one, it's like, you know, he was struggling, getting better, had a good chance to finish the season strong and carry in some momentum until next year. But two, I mean, look, if you want to go hang out at casinos until 8 a.m., by all means, do what you need to do. You had to wait 1 week to do that until the season's over.
Exactly.
You know, like 1 week left in the season, and you can do as much as you want from October till mid-February, within reason, I guess. But, like, is that that's kind of more of, like, maybe the upsetting part is that, like, it's more dumb than like, you know, oh, he has a gambling problem maybe, or he has a partying problem maybe, or maybe it was just a couple of bad nights. Again, we've seen reports that this isn't really the first time that he's been out late in the casino. But, you know, he had to wait just one more week, man, and then the season's over, and you could have done as much as you wanted with no real repercussions. And so that's kind of disappointing. But, no, I don't think the work ethic is in question. Again, I hope this is kind of – the Nationals are sending him a message. Hey, this is not going to be tolerated. You can't be doing this, especially in season. We have a lot riding on you. We have a lot invested in you for our future. If you're going to be the leader of this team, the all-star of this team, you know, you can't be doing that, you know. And, you know, also, this is not really a shot at CJ, but he hasn't really earned that right yet. I mean, I know he was an all-star this year, but it's only his second full season in the majors. You know, you're not like a, you know, seven-time All-Star, future, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer in the making just yet, right? So, like, you kind of have to earn some of those privileges as a veteran, or the benefit of the doubt, I guess I should say. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunate situation. Hopefully, you know, he kind of accepts this. You know, knowing that his dad is around a lot and his dad is really tough on him, I'm hoping that, you know, maybe Mr. Abrams kind of steps in and becomes like a good father figure for him and helps him through this. But bad look for him and the Nationals. Actually, I would say good look for the Nationals. Like I said, I think they handled it well and did the right thing. But hopefully he gets his act together and gets whatever he needs sorted out and comes back next year and is an all-star shortstop for them again.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's part of why I wanted to bring that up is, you know, you look at last year's situation like Luis and you kind of like you pull the comparisons and I just don't think they're all that similar because this year it's more so a professionalism sort of thing from CJ. He puts in the work necessary. So I think, you know, at least I'm hoping that this will send the message and he'll understand going forward he can't do some of those things. He'll act more like a professional off the field. Talking with Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports, the Nats final week, they got 6 games left. They'll take on the Royals for 3. We'll be back with another BLB after that and also wrapping up the season against the Phillies at the end of the week. They need 2 wins to get to their season win total from last year. They're sitting at 69 wins. They had 71 last year. Bobby, are they going to get to their win total from last year, or will they maybe go 500 this week and surpass last year's win total?
I hope that they get those last 3 wins. You know, maybe you take 2 or 3 from the Royals. Maybe the Phillies clinch the NL East and the number 1 seed in the NL before next weekend. So they're resting guys. You can maybe steal a couple of cheap wins from them. I really, man, like from the get-go of this year, 71 was the target for me. Like, I know in the grand scheme of things, right now the win-loss record doesn't mean that much. I think this is still an improvement from last year because of CJ having an all-star first half, because of James Wood making his debut and being one of, if not the best player on this team for the last couple of months of the season. Dylan Cruz making an impact late in the season. You know, you got guys like Jake Irvin pitching at all-star levels at time, Mitchell Parker. I mean, we could talk all about the whole improvement. I still think this year is an improvement from last year, despite the win total. But man, I want to see 72 wins on that scoreboard as opposed to 71 or less, because that is an actual tangible number we can point to that, hey, they did win more games this year. Next year is like, all right, can they crack 500? Can they be in the playoff race in late August, September of next year? But, you know, despite what the win-loss record will be at the end of this week, I still think this is an improvement from last year, but I still want to see 72.
Yeah, I agree with you that it feels like an improvement, but, you know, like you said, at the same point, they're going to either finish with 70, 71, 72 wins, so it's really not, you know, tangible improvement on the win-loss record. What gives you that encouragement that you feel like, okay, they did take a stride this year, even if it isn't something you see in the win-loss record?
I think it's the guys that we just talked about. I mean, CJ, you know, we talked about his whole situation, but he had an all-star first half. He was his team's all-star. You know, he struggled. He was getting it back as of late and in September. So, you know, you extrapolate that over 162 game season. Maybe he finally puts it all together next year. That's a big step for him. You know, looking down further down the line, we talked about James Wood, Dylan Cruz. Those are obvious signs of improvement. But like guys like Mitchell Parker or DJ Hurst coming up and not only making their debuts, but sticking with the major league team. I know they sent DJ down right before the All-Star break to kind of give him a reset, but he's been a part of this rotation for a majority of the season now. And Mitchell Parker, you know, because of Josiah Gray's injury back in April, had to make his debut at Dodger Stadium and is now at times been one of the best pitchers in this rotation. I think those kind of storylines really make this season an improvement, because you got guys that those are two obvious examples where, you know, and Jake Irvin was this last year where, you know, they weren't really expected to be the first guys up, but they had their name called and they made the most of that opportunity. I think those are really good. One, because Mitchell was drafted, two, DJ was traded for, but that's good player scouting and development stories for the Nationals and their new player development staff and part of their front office. They totally revamped that at the end of last year. And I think these are two good stories of that, that, hey, we can draft, we can acquire talent through trades and make them a signature piece of our major league roster. I think those right there are really good examples of how this team has improved this year, because you got guys like DJ and Mitchell not only reaching the majors, but making an impact for the long haul.
Yeah, and honestly, it's almost like last year was a flip of what this year was. Last year, the first half wasn't very good. The second half was awesome, and you saw some guys take some real strides. CJ took some real strides, and some of the guys. This year, it felt like the first half, you saw some real strides out of the pitchers you mentioned. Like, Gore was awesome in the first half. Jake Irvin arguably had an all-star first half. Some of these guys just looked fantastic, and then maybe they came crashing down to earth a little bit in the second half. But, you know, I've heard some scouts on different podcasts kind of talk about this. If you've seen them do it once, maybe they can do it again. Like, you feel like you can find something in there. And so with these guys, what they were able to do in the first half, if they can find a little bit of that, you feel encouraged. But looking at next year, Bobby, like, you look at the rotation, they're going to lose Patrick Corbin, Trevor Williams in the final year of his deal. So there's some veterans gone. I mean, they could go full youth movement in the pitching rotation. I don't think that would be, you know, the smartest. I think it'd be wise to maybe go get somebody. But what do you think the rotation looks like for next year? Is it something where you think they could go spend and maybe go, maybe not go top of the market like a Corbin Burns, but go for somebody that's more middle of the rotation? What do you kind of look at that rotation for next year looking like?
Yeah, I think it's going to be majority youth. I think you're going to have – I mean, we know Josiah Gray is going to be out for basically all of next year as well. So you're going to start with Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker, probably DJ Hurst. If Cade Cavalli is actually healthy when we get to spring training, he'll be competing for a spot as well. Maybe, you know, it comes down between him and DJ for like that fifth or fourth spot. And I do think they signed someone. I think, you know, Davey Martinez has talked so much about how Patrick Corbin and Trevor Williams have meant so much, not to just the pitcher's room, but, you know, the whole bullpen and the whole team as a whole, being just that veteran leadership. I think Davey sees a lot of value in that. I think Mike Rizzo does as well. So I would expect them to go get someone. you know, kind of in between a Patrick Corbin and a Trevor Williams. Patrick Corbin meaning his contract, not his actual performance. Like, you know,
2019 long, Corbin, right?
Right, right. Like, you know, kind of somewhere, and but like, you know, a multi-year deal. Were for, you know, I don't have the list of pending free agents right in front of me, but like not Corbin Burns, I wouldn't expect, although that'd be awesome. But yeah, someone in like kind of in the tier B area of a starting pitcher to eat innings, because, you know, I mean, say what you will about Patrick Corbin, he at least did that, and that helps. And, you know, to be kind of that leadership role in that clubhouse for this young rotation, because, you know, we just talked about CJ Abrams and, you know, him kind of losing his grasp as the leader of this team because of this incident. You know, who's going to step up? I don't know who we have a lot of confidence in right now to be that leader in the rotation going into next year. I mean, eventually it's going to be the likes of Mackenzie Gore, Josiah Gray, Jake Irvin, but they're still so young and they still have very little major league experience comparatively to a free agent they could go get. So I think they're going to go bring someone in, but it's going to be mostly those young guys that we mentioned. And that's going to be a fun rotation. If they pitch like they did for a majority of this year, I think that's going to be a fun young rotation to follow.
So I want to get to the position players in just a second. Staying with the pitching staff, talking with Bobby Blanco from Madison Sports. When you look at it, to me, there's really two guys in the organization right now that have ace-type potential. One of them being Mackenzie Gore, the other being Travis Sikora, who we won't see in the majors, you know, presumably until, you know, probably 2 years down the line, maybe late next year. I would highly even doubt that. So it feels like they're kind of missing that. Is it something where they need to sign something? Like, what do they need for pitchers? Because to me, like, when you look at Jake Irvin, he fits in that bin of like a 3-5 starter. I think Hers is in there. I think, and the beauty of it, I've talked about this on previous pod. The beauty is if you go with Hers, you go with Irvin, you go with Parker in your rotation for next year, any one of those guys can pitch like a 3 and maybe slightly above at times. They could also pitch like a 5 at times. But the beauty is if one of them just kind of go in and the other one takes a step back, it doesn't matter where you slot them in. They can kind of fill that role. But do they have another guy, or is that something where they have to go get? Because to me, they've got a bunch of back to middle of rotation. They just don't have the frontline starters.
Right. And like looking specifically just to next year, you know, when it comes to frontline starter, I don't want to count out Josiah Gray, but he's not going to be here available next year. Sure. So, you know, down the line, it's probably more of a conversation between Josiah and Mackenzie. You know, well, this year, a lot of the conversation of spring training was, well, between those two guys, because you can't start Patrick Corbin on opening day, which one of those two guys was going to get the opening day nod? And then Mackenzie got the home opener, which is basically, you know, the next best thing after opening day. So, yeah, I agree that Mackenzie has the most top of the line stuff, ace like stuff. And then after that, it is kind of a mixed bag in a good way, like you mentioned. But yeah, no, I still anticipate them adding somebody, not a Corbin Burns, although again, like I said, that would be fun and exciting. But someone who can be maybe like a solid number 2 or 3 guy, and you can bump everyone that you just mentioned down a bit. You know, you don't need to put all that pressure on a Jake Irvin to be the number 2 guy on this rotation, or Mitchell Parker be number 3. It kind of takes some pressure off. But also, like I said, an innings eater. Like, I really do think that there is – I mean, they got lucky last year in terms of health. That didn't obviously play come around again this year. But, you know, I think being able to have guys that eat innings take some pressure off these other young pitchers – I mean, the Nationals talk all about, you know, they want to increase their starting pitchers' innings by like 20 to 30% every year. So, you know, these guys aren't going to be making ideally around 30 starts, but to keep them healthy, you know, you got to spread them out. And I think having another guy or two, maybe bring in 2 guys and take some pressure off like guys like DJ Hers. And, you know, if he starts in the minors, that's fine. You know, he can come up later, because I do think, like you said, we're not going to see a guy like Travis Sikora for a couple of seasons. So there is a role to be filled between possibly losing Trevor Williams and definitely losing Patrick Corbin after the season.
Moving over to position players, you know, we've kind of alluded to it. I feel like they need at least one starter, whether it's frontline or at least someone that eats some innings, just a veteran presence in that rotation. For position players, what do you view as the biggest need going into next season?
Power bat. They need some kind of power, whether that's coming as a first baseman, to replace Joey Gallo, or a corner outfielder, and you kind of makeshift, you know, with Jacob Young, Dylan Cruz, James Wood. But they need power, and they need it badly. I mean, this is one of the worst power hitting teams in the majors. There was the same story last year. I just don't think you can go into the season counting on, okay, James Wood's going to hit 30 homers. You know, K-Bur Ruiz is going to figure it out and hit 20 bombs for us. You got lucky, not lucky, but like you saw improvement from like guys like Luis Garcia Jr., but power is not his calling card, you know, and neither is it going to be for, you know, guys like CJ Abrams, you know, whoever of the infielders are still around. So first baseman, DH, corner outfield, whatever it may be, but they need a guy that can come in and they can kind of pretty much guarantee this is a guy's going to hit 25 to 30 homers for us this year because they need it badly. And I'm not talking about like a Joey Gallo signing where, hey, maybe you know, catch lightning in a bottle and he does that for you. I think it needs to be kind of a more of a sure thing, maybe a multi-year deal. They don't have a first baseman of the future. If they have someone in the minor leagues, it's probably going to be someone like Yo-Yo Morales. Not quite there yet. You can't really count on Brady House coming up next year either, being their third baseman and suddenly being a major power bat in their lineup. So I really do think that they absolutely need a power bat in some form or another, and a guaranteed power bat, you know, like not a Joey Gallo, not some guy you signed to a one-year deal with $5 million deferred over 3 years, but someone you can count on for the next couple of seasons being your, you know, your number four, number five hitter that will hit 20-plus bombs for you every season.
Yeah, and I agree. And one of the things I want to bring this conversation up, we had this about a month ago. It was kind of something that was all over Nat's Twitter. I'm curious on your thoughts on it. A lot of people were talking about, okay, they need to add a power bat, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. I argue it should be a first baseman over a corner outfielder for the reason of I think Jacob Young deserves to be in the field every single day. I think he's earned the right to be your center fielder. Other people are saying, okay, well, Dylan Cruz is a legit center fielder. We've seen that plenty in the minor leagues. We saw it in college and even bits over the weekend. We saw him play a good center field. What are your thoughts on that? Does Jacob Young, like, has he earned that spot to the point that they don't even, you know, if they get a nice deal in a corner outfielder, I think you still do it. But is it something where, you know, Jacob Young is your center fielder and you're not worried about it and you're looking more at the first base market? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree that I think if you had your pick, like if Mike Rizzo could, you know, make his selection right now, it would be a first baseman, yeah. Someone who could be first base DH type. And yeah, cause you have corner outfielders, those three guys, Wood, Cruz, Young is a great one defensive outfield, but two pretty solid offensively. I mean, if you think about the power that James Wood brings, you think about, you know, the gap to gap power and maybe some even a little more power that Dylan Cruz could bring. I mean, he could be like a 15, 20 homer guy potentially. He also steals a lot of bags. We know Jacob Young can steal a lot of bags and get on base for you. That's a solid offensive outfield to go along with, you know, you probably have three gold glove caliber fielders out there. So I think if Mike Rizzo had his pick, it would be a first baseman power bat that could also, you know, split time as a DH, whatever it may be. And then you also have guys like, I know he was hurt for majority of the season, but don't sleep on Robert Hassel III in the minors, maybe coming up next year. You know, Elijah Green, why some people probably have given up on him. He had a strong second half at Fredericksburg. Maybe he finally turns a corner, comes up. I mean, they have plenty of outfielders. So I don't think outfielders should be a priority this offseason. But like you mentioned, if that's what you end up with, then by all means do it, because you do need to add power one way or another.
You mentioned the corner outfielders, James Wood, Dylan Cruz. They've kind of been the story here of the second half, and James Wood has been fantastic. What have you made of James Wood? Because we were talking about this, just the fact that, you know, we had the media awards come out and vote on that and whatever, and, you know, you kind of can't put James Wood in there because he didn't come up until July, but you felt like you could almost still do it because he's been that impressive, and it just speaks to how good he's been since he's been in the majors. What have been your thoughts of James Wood as, you know, we're getting to the end of his first season in the bigs?
Yeah, full disclosure, I don't know if we're allowed to say it, but I will. I voted for Luis Garcia Jr. for the player of the year.
Love it.
But it would have been James Wood had he been here this entire season. Like, the only reason I didn't vote for James was because he came up in July, and Luis has been here the whole season. So But yeah, I mean, no, I think James has had, I mean, and you and I have talked about this in person. You know, I'm sure when you had me on, Grand Danny, we talked about how everything about him is impressive. What I think is the most impressive for me watching him on a daily basis is how he commands the strike zone. We know the power is going to be there. We know the speed, the athleticism. I think his defense also has improved a lot. In left field, I know there were some concerns early on. I think he's done a really good job of getting better out there. The arm is fantastic when he makes plays. But the strike zone, you know, I always just think back to last year, all the strikeouts, and that was the big red flag, and that was the one thing the Nationals really tasked him to improve upon over last offseason heading into this spring training was cutting down the strikeouts. I know he's striking out at a pretty decent clip still in the majors, but he's walking also at a good amount of clips. And we've talked about how it feels like he's getting, you know, kind of jocked up there by some umpires, one, because of his size, and two, he's a rookie. He doesn't get the benefit of the doubt, really, but I think he is a fantastic guy out there. I think that at times where he could be frustrated and kind of let that frustration out, he hasn't. He's stayed within himself, and he's, you know, Davey mentions all the time, it's like, hey, you know, you're not going to get to all the calls. It's baseball. That happens. But, you know, stay within yourself. Know who you are. Command that strike zone and wait for your pitch. I think he's done a really good job of that. And, you know, this could be a very different conversation if he doesn't do that. You know, we'd be talking about, wow, he started off so well, but, you know, the majors kind of caught up to him and he struggled. So, you know, maybe it's a question mark going to next year. Nope, none of that. That is not even on the table because he has adjusted so well up here. And I think the Nationals also deserve credit for their patience with him in the minors and waiting until July. I know it was supposed to be June. He had that hammy injury. But I think their patience with him is really pulling off or coming, you know, showing itself because he's having a really, really strong second half.
Yeah, and I feel like with him, like you said, it's been so impressive. And he, at times he does get horrible calls and he just relaxed, goes back to the dugout, kind of handles his business. And he's been so impressive. And I think he's going to be an absolute stud for this team going forward. Taking a look at Dylan Crews, also with Wood. Everyone has struggled. All the rookies have struggled for the most part this season. He really hasn't had long stretches where his numbers are fine. Speaking of someone that struggled a little bit, Dylan Crews only hitting 204 right now as he goes into his final week as a first-year big leaguer. What have you made of Dylan Crews? To me, it feels like he's put together good at-bats. He looks like a professional. I think he already is, and even though he's only been up for, 20 games or so, it feels like he's already somewhere as – you talk about leadership in that clubhouse. I think just because of the draft position and just the way that he carries himself, to me, he already seems like a leader in that clubhouse. What have you made of Dylan Crews?
I totally agree. I think he is, you know, the draft position coming from out of LSU, you know, basically winning the equivalent of the Heisman in college baseball, all of that coming together. He's a Boris guy, you know, he knows how to handle this. And this meeting, like the media attention, the pressure, he always says pressure is a privilege, which is cliche, but I think he truly believes it and embraces that saying. When it comes to this play, like I agree. I think he's adjusting pretty decently. I mean, it's not James Wood-like, but I don't think that's fair to put that kind of pressure on Dylan, no matter how much he likes to say that saying. I think that, you know, the league has adjusted to him. He's getting a lot of off-speed stuff, a lot of breaking balls, and he's having some trouble adjusting to it, which will come, right? I mean, pretty much you just talked about a lot of rookies have struggled this year. And, you know, so it's not just him. I still think that Dylan Crews is going to be a great, if not phenomenal, baseball player for this team moving forward and what a pairing it's going to be with him and James Wood in the years to come. But, you know, I think this has been a solid learning experience for him over, what was it, 20 games you said? So, you know, getting that experience, finish the season in the major leagues, pretty much knowing that, you know, that's kind of your roster spot to lose going into next year. He's a very driven kid. He's very motivated. You can just tell again, I don't want to be too cliche when it comes to Dylan Crews, but he does love the game. He does love, you know, kind of like that first guy in, last guy to leave mentality. And I think he embraces that. And I think that's a good one for his on-field play. But two, like you mentioned, him being a leader in that clubhouse, I think that's going to go a long way.
Yeah, he reminds me a little bit, if you added some of the maturity just because of the fact that he played at LSU, he reminds me of the energy that Bryce brought when he was first brought up. But, you know, Bryce had to be told to stop running into walls. That's not the case for Dylan Cruz. Like, he's got a little bit of an understanding to go along with it. I think he brings that sort of thing. I wanted to talk, you mentioned, you know, you voted for Luis Garcia Jr. as player of the year for yourself. Like, I think it was honestly down to him and, you know, some of the other guys on this team, like a CJ or a Jacob Younger. But I fully understand going with Luis Garcia. And, you know, I was going to ask you maybe biggest surprise of the year, but I don't know how it couldn't be Luis Garcia, because this is a guy that we were talking about and we talked about it on this podcast. Grant and Danny talked about it plenty on the show. Like, going into the year, there were plenty of people saying, all right, it's time, pull the plug, we're done. And it was something for me that it felt like he had one last chance going into spring training. And there was a spot in spring training where he had back-to-back days with horrendous errors. And it felt like, okay, at that point, it's time to move on. They gave him one more shot and he's taken full advantage this year.
Yeah, I think that those back-to-back days might've been like right after you guys left West Palm. And it was like nearing my time down there. And I remember writing and thinking and talking to people being like, he's blowing this. Like, he is – like, I wanted Trey Lipscomb to come to start on the Major League roster over Luis Garcia Jr. And I was like, I mean, he's had his chance. I mean, maybe it's time to move forward. I think at the time, Trey's better defensively. I think his bat will come around. I don't think Trey – you know, Trey Lipscomb is going to be your long-term, you know, everyday third baseman, but he could definitely be your long-term everyday second baseman. And – or you know, really good defensive replacement coming off the bench. I think Trey Lipscomb definitely has a role to play moving forward, but that's a conversation. Back to Louis, he proved everyone wrong. I'm so glad he did, too. Like, I think that this is a great story for not just him, but the organization, where they challenged him. You know, they really stuck it to him and been like, hey, you know, it's now or never. You're either with us or you're not. And I think after those two rough days in, what was it, early March, whatever needed to be said was said. Whatever needed to happen, happened, and it clicked for him, and he's having a really good year. If you've got a 280 hitter, you know, hitting close to 20 home runs with an OPS plus of over 100 as your everyday second baseman, that's solid. I mean, I think you'll take that, and he's becoming the guy that they thought all along he could be. So what a great story for Louis. I'm, you know, knowing him a little personally, I'm like proud of him. But also professionally, it's kind of like, all right, like, he does have it in him. He can be this guy. And I think that's exciting for him and the team.
Yeah, and I think the frustrating part for Louis throughout his career is we've seen stretches before where he was able to have really good success and he wouldn't be able to carry it on for more than, you know, a couple of weeks, and then it would go back to the head-scratching plays Luis Garcia had. This year, he's been arguably their most consistent player, just throughout the year, kind of giving you the same thing you feel like you can expect, 270, and feel good about what he's done defensively as well. So it's been impressive. A couple more. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think the biggest thing, too, is his improvement defensively. I mean, like, the bat, I think we all kind of knew it was there. Like you mentioned, we've seen streaks of him getting hot and playing really well. So we all knew that potential was there. I think a lot of the questions coming into the year was him defensively, and some of those errors he made in spring training was on the defensive side of the ball, and he's cleaned that up. I mean, he has been such a revelation at defensively at second base. He's made some – one, he's making the routine play more often.
Yes.
Than not. And then two, he's making some spectacular plays as well along the way, which is, I think, all they can ask for. And it's been really fun to watch. A
couple more for you here before we let you go. Talking with Bobby Blanco from Mass, and we'll do some quick hitters here. Three guys, where do they fit going into next year? Let's start with Jose Tena. Where does he fit?
I think he'll start as your opening day third baseman. But I think honestly, he's more of a placeholder right now until Brady House is ready. I think Brady House is the third baseman of the future. Tang is a good option. I mean, we've seen in the exit velocities off his bat are crazy. I think he also, in a short amount of time, he also has improved defensively. I think there was an adjustment period playing in the majors every day that he needed some getting used to. But I think he's taken that mantle up and performed admirably. But I do, unfortunately for him, I think that he's more of a placeholder right now until Brady House is ready.
Second name, Nassim Nunez. Where does he fit?
You know, after this year, I mean, they were able to stash him and keep him through his Rule 5 status. So they'll be able to option him after this season. And, you know, I see him starting as, like, the everyday shortstop at AAA next year. Infield depth. I know they really love his glove. He plays an unbelievable shortstop, probably better than CJ at times too. I mean, he's got a great arm. He's so quick. His range is unbelievable. That is some good shortstop depth if anything ever were to happen, God forbid, to CJ Abrams. Not like what we just saw this weekend we talked earlier, but more of like an injury situation.
Yeah.
I think he is great. I mean, and that's kind of – you know, if he's not – you know, not everyone can be Anthony Santander in terms of you get an all-star in the Rule 5 draft, but if you get solid organizational depth at a premium position from the Rule 5 draft, I think that's still a win.
Last one here, Darren Baker, where does he fit?
Man, Darren was – to tie it back to Luis Garcia last year, when Louis got sent down before the end of the year, you know, it was Darren Baker where everyone was like, why not give him a shot? You know, let's see what he's got. He's finally getting it this year. That also is just a cool story. Obviously, being drafted by the Nationals twice, his dad, of course, managed here. He's getting, you know, a Hall of Fame managerial career. I think kind of along the same lines of Nassim Nunez. I don't know if he has the defensive capabilities that Nassim does, but he's probably better offensively. So maybe a better offensive version of Nassim Nunez, but for second base. He is versatile. They've trotted him out in the corner outfield spots in the minor leagues before. So he could play multiple roles, but I think that's just another organizational depth piece, which for a 10th round pick out of Cal, you know, that's not bad either.
Yeah, I felt like he's needed an opportunity for a while, and he's taken advantage so far in his time in the big leagues. I'm hoping they can maybe find a spot for him, even if it's just, you know, hanging out as a utility guy off the bench. Last question for you, Bobby, before we let you go. Where is this team at in their rebuild? Is this something where realistically you can look at next year? You know, it's felt like the timelines have been murky. Like, it felt like last year at times the timeline got moved up a year, and then at times it felt like it got moved back a year. And then this year, first half of the season, it felt like, okay, maybe next year. And now it's kind of like, well, is it really next year? So where is their timeline? Where are they at in their rebuild?
You know, we could have spent the whole pod on this question. But seriously, that's the biggest question, right? I mean, that's what every fan wants to know. That's what we as reporters want to know. You know, the Nationals never did put a timeline on this from the get-go, which is fair. They probably shouldn't anyways, because you don't want to set yourself up for failure. But I think for me, being around this team, you know, almost every day, and I'm curious of what you think too, but – we've heard Davey Martinez, Mike Rizzo, and some players off the cuff mention next year as a playoff run. They've been talking about, you know, this time next year, we want to be in it. We want to be making a push. And so whether they meant to or not, for me, that's kind of putting a timeline on it. And I think next year is, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about how the wins and losses don't really matter for this year. I think next year they do. I think if you're not closer – or at least above 500 next year, that's a significant, I don't want to say step backwards, but, you know, maybe not as much progress as we've seen over the past 2 years. You got guys like James Wood, Dylan Cruz making their debuts. You got really strong seasons from Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker, DJ Hurz, you know, Mackenzie Gore pitching like an all-star or an ace at times as well. So, you know, obviously they'll be missing Josiah Gray. This roster could look a little different next year, but if they add the right pieces – what, you know, I don't mean to answer your question with a question, but it's, you know, I think the follow-up to that is, well, what do they do this offseason? Do they actually add that power bat we talked about? Do they actually add, you know, a decent starting pitcher to this rotation like we talked about? If they do, I think that is the signal that they're saying, all right, 2025 is the year that we're going to be back. We've got the young pieces in place. They've got their experience. We had a couple of veterans, and this roster is ready to make a wild card push in late September. I think that's what's going to be most telling of how they feel about it is this offseason. If they actually spend some money, they actually add the pieces they need to, not just placeholders like we've seen them do the past couple of seasons. Hopefully they do, because that'll make next year very exciting.
Yeah, I think it has to be next year, Bobby, right? I mean, you talk about James Wood's going to be on the opening day roster. Mm-hmm. Pretty good chance Dylan Cruz is going to be on the opening day roster. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of the young guys here, and the young guys that are in the wings after that, they're not the top five prospects like James Wood was, like Dylan Cruz is right now for MLB Pipeline. Like they're good. I think some of these guys can be really good. I think Brady House is kind of slept on as a prospect overall, but he's probably not going to end up as a top 10 prospect in baseball when he gets called up. Maybe Sikora has that sort of ceiling, but they've called their guys up. Now it's time to go. Maybe it's something where they don't make the playoffs next year, but they have to be approaching 500 next year to feel like it's a success. Because if you're just right around the same spot you were this year, then, you know, I don't know that you're really taking steps forward. So I do think it kind of has to be next year.
I agree. And I don't always love making this comparison because they are different and it's sometimes too easy to, but I'm trying to, like, I look at it as like next year could be like the 2022 Orioles, mm-hmm. right? Like where they weren't supposed to be that good. They finished with 83 wins. They were technically in a playoff hunt, you know, entering September, the last month of the season, which was exciting. But they didn't quite make it. And then the following year, you know, they won 101 games and, you know, was the number one seed in the AL. So I'm not saying that should be the Nationals timeline, but you can make those kind of parallels and comparisons that, you know, if they do win 80 plus games next year with an improved roster and big steps from some of their top guys, top young guys, then okay, maybe 2026 is the year that, hey, all right, you know, the Phillies and Braves are older and maybe they can take a stab at this division.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, if we're going to use them as a comparison, like, the difference is the Orioles had guys like Jackson Holliday still coming down the line, Kobe Mayo. Yeah. The Nats maybe don't have that, but for the sake of comparison, like James Wood and Dylan Cruz are like a Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. They're up and they're ready to go. Yeah. Those are your cornerstone guys. So now it's time to hit the gas pedal. If you're not going to hit the gas pedal when Cruz and Wood are in the bigs, I don't know that you're ever going to hit the gas pedal. So at some point you're going to have to do it.
I think also your point where you said of, you know, they've called their guys up. I think it's very true because you look at like their top 30 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline, Dylan Cruz still counts, but he won't be at the end of the season. Brady House, we talked about, he's expected to make his debut sometime next year, but all their other top prospects are high A or lower. You know, they're not that close. So you've called up your crop of young guys, you know, the guys that are still probably going to make their debuts, you know, Kay Cavalli already made his debut, shaking off Tommy John. Maybe Robert Hassel III, but then everyone else is either in high A ball or lower. Single A Fredericksburg, which shout out to the Fred Nats for winning a championship.
Absolutely.
And rookie level ball, you know, either in Dominican or in Florida. So, you know, their first crop of young guys, like you said, is already here. So now's the time because that next wave isn't going to come until 2026, 2027. And maybe some of these guys are trade pieces, you know, at next year's deadline or the 2026 deadline, something like that. So, yeah, I think that your point of you've made your move is very solid, and I agree with because, their guys are up, and now you need to add the actual pieces to make this roster competitive, not just placeholders, not just guys that are filling time until some of the guys are up because you guys are already up.
Bobby, appreciate the time, man. Always good to talk.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, Toby. Really appreciate it. Go Commanders.
Always good to chat and catch up with our guy Bobby from MassinSports.com. Make sure you check him out on Twitter. Fantastic coverage on the team from Masson. That's going to do it for episode 152 of Bustin' Loose Baseball. Appreciate you guys for listening. Grant and I will be back after the Royals series, so make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review, and we'll make sure to read it on our next podcast. Final week of the regular season getting underway for the Nats. We'll be back after the Royals series. Enjoy Nats baseball.